Yosei, it is an incredible schos, Baruch Hashem, to be able to be here with all of you today, albeit virtually. Halavai, we should be zochei meretz Hashem to be in Yerushalayim together. I want to wish everyone a freilich and Chanukah, a good tevach, and thank you to Rabbi Richter for giving the shir over the last couple of days. I hope meretz Hashem to be able to give shir for hopefully, I'm going to try for all of this week, schedule permitting meretz Hashem. But it's a great schos, Baruch Hashem, every day they were able to learn together. Today's daf is Lamed Ches 38. And I'm sure you got a little bit further on Shabbos, but for the sake of just efficiency, let's pick up at the Mishnah on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis 38b. So the Mishnah says as follows, Shor Shal Yisrael Shenagach Shor Shal Hekdish. If a shor of a Jew went ahead and gored a shor that belongs to Hekdish, Hekdish means the Beis HaMikdash, V'shal Hekdish Shenagach L'shor Shal Hadyot, or for that matter, a shor, an ox that belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, went ahead and gored a regular Jew, or right, the shor of a regular Jew, pater, ultimately in either case you're pater. So whether it's the shor of a regular Jew that gores the shor of Hekdish, or it's the shor of Hekdish that gores the shor of a regular Jew, either way, one is pater. Shene emar, shari ehu v'lo shor shal Hekdish, because the pasuk says, it is only liability when you go ahead and you injure shor re'ehu, the shor of your fellow. Fellow means another individual. What the Mishnah is saying is re'ehu, your fellow, however, comes to exclude Hekdish, that one would not be liable if they gore a shor of Hekdish, nor would a shor of Hekdish be liable if it gores my shor. Okay, let's go back there. Says Gemara, shor shal yisrael shenagach l'shor shal kenani pater. If the shor of a Jew goes ahead and gores the shor of a non-Jew, ultimately, again, pater, v'shal kenani shenagach l'shor shal yisrael. But if the shor of a kenani goes ahead and gores the shor of a yisrael, bein tam bein mua mishalim nezik shalim. So two interesting halachas. If the shor of a Jew goes ahead and gores the shor of a non-Jew, pater, exempt. But if the shor of a non-Jew gores the shor of a Jew, whether the goring shor was a tam or a muad, ultimately, again, the non-Jew pays the Jew nezek shalom in complete damages. It says the Gemara, Masnisin, the loke Rishim Amenasio. Our Mishnah clearly does not reflect the Rishim Amenasio. Why not? The Sanyo, shor shal hedyot, shenagach shor shal hekdish, vishal hekdish, shenagach shor shal hedyot, pater, shenemar, shor evelo shor shal hekdish. So remember again, Gemara quotes this Braisa. The Braisa, first part of the Braisa, echoes the same theme as our Mishnah, that whether the shor of a Jew gores the shor of Hekdish, or shor of Hekdish goes ahead and gores the shor of a Jew, either way you're potter. Why? Because re'ehu, because the pasuk was speaking about liability for goring, Dafka talks about one shor goring the shor of his fellow. But again, in this case, the re'ehu requirement has not been satisfied. Rav Shimon Manasi Omer, post a second wide line, Laman Zayin Beis 37b, Rav Shimon Manasi Omer, Shor shal hekdish shenagach shor shal hedyot pater v'shal hedyot shenagach shor shal hekdish. So Reb Shimon Asi says like this: if ultimately, again, if a shor of hekdish gores a shor of a regular person, right, of a regular person, then it's pater. There's no liability for hekdish. However, v'shal hedyot shenagach shor shal hekdish bein tam bein mur mishalim nezek shalim. Reb Shimon Asi, however, says that if a regular Jew's shor goes ahead and gores the shor of hekdish, complete liability. Whether the goring shor is a tam or a muad, whenever you injure Hekdish, you always have to pay nezek shalim. Omri. So here's the shayla. So this is the position. So obviously the Gemara says, our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rav Shem Manasya, because Rav Shem Manasya holds that although it's true that if a shor of Hekdish gores the shor of a regular Jew, that there's no liability. If the shor of a regular Jew gores the shor of Hekdish, whether the goring shor is a tam or a muad, you have to always pay nezek shalim to Hekdish. This is being Rav Shem Manasya. Simar says, what's the pshat? What does Rav Shimon hold? I re'ehu dafka, if he darshins re'ehu, then afilu shahed yoshinagach shal hekdish lipater. If you darshin re'ehu, then even the shor of a regular Jew, which gores the shor of hekdish, should be pater. V'i re'ehu lav dafka, but if re'ehu is not dafka, if you don't darshin re'ehu, afilu de hekdish nami kinagach de hedyot ki lechayiv, then a shor of hekdish, if it gores the shor of a regular person, should also be chayiv. So Rav Shimon Manasi, what's the pshat? What are you darshaning? V'chitim on the olam kasav re'ehu dafka. Maybe Rav Shimon Manasi holds that no, re'ehu is dafka. In other words, the halacha l'maisa, re'ehu means there's only liability for goring the shor of another Jew, of re'ehu. U'mihu dehedyot ki nagach dehekdish. Ta'inu ta'ima de'mechayi. So why is it then? If that's the case, Rav Shimon Manasi darshans, if he does darshan re'ehu, then in the case of where a regular Jew, his shar, gores the shar of Hekdesh. Why is reliability? Mishum the kamesim and kavachomer. Mishum Rasa means kavachomer. What's the kavachomer? So he says, kavachomer de hedyot. Uma hedyot shenagach shal hedyot chayiv. If when a shar of a regular Jew gores the shar of a regular Jew, there's liability. Ki nagach de Hekdesh lakol shekain. All the more so if a Jew, right? If, in other words, if the Rav Shimon Asi's logic is like this, if there's liability for goring the shor of a regular Jew, then Allah has kama b'kama, there should be liability for goring the shor of Hekdish as well. It's a kavachomer. L'koshkin mechayiv. Tush Gemara says, 1 second, if that's going to be a kavachomer, then dayo lava min adin lioskin. You know, we'll see, we spend a significant amount of time with dayo, right? When you make a kavachomer, then ultimately, again, remember, the kavachomer, the strength of the kavachomer is capped at the strength of the two respective parts. So the Gemara says, for example, So okay, you want to make a kavachomer, What's kavachomer? If there's liability when one Jew gores the shor of another Jew, then alachas kama v'kama, there is liability when one Jew gores the shor of Hekdesh. Or, you understand what we say, when the shor of a Jew gores the shor of Hekdesh. That's your kavachomer. That's fine, but then just like when the shor of a Jew gores the shor of another Jew, there's a distinction between tam and muad, and tam only pays chatzi nezek. That same distinction should apply when a Jew goes ahead and gores the shor of Hekdesh. Yet Rav Shimon Manasi, yet we said before that halacha lemaisa, there's complete liability when going the shor of Hekdesh. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, El Amrei Shlakish, Hakol Hayu Bechlal Nezek Shalim. In reality, Rav Shlakish is like this. Here's the svara of Shem Manasya. In reality, really, there should be Nezek Shalim. In other words, we'll say, the concept, when you damage someone, there's complete damages. So really, the way we start out on the laws of damages is that when you damage someone, there's Nezek Shalim. Kishepartacha Kosov Re'ehu Gabe Tam. Re'ehu de Tam Mishalim Chatzi Nezek. Mechlal de Hekdesh Bein Tam Bein Mu'ar Mishalim Nezek Shalim. This is interesting. Shlok is an interesting idea over here. He says, in reality, when you damage someone, there should be Nezek Shalim. Chatzi Nezek is a Chiddush. Half damages by a Tam is a Chiddush. And where is half damages introduced? Dafka by the phrase of Re'ehu. To teach you that it is only damage done to another Jew that carries the penalty of Chatzi Nezek. But if you damage Hekdesh, it's always Nezek Shalim. Fascinating. Top of Lamed Ches. The Imkein Nechtov Kra Lahai Re'ehu Gabi Muad. Because otherwise, you could have written Re'ehu by Muad. The fact that ultimately, Chatzi Nezek is only written, I should say, that Re'ehu is only written by Chatzi Nezek. I'm sorry. The Gemara says, let me just read that. The imkain, top line, chalam echasanav. The imkain, because otherwise, nichtov kra, let the Torah write this pasuk, lahai re'ehu gabi muad. Let the Torah put re'ehu by muad. So the fact that ultimately, again, re'ehu is dafka mentioned by tam, indicates to us that the chiddush of chatzi nezek is only a din by re'ehu, that is a tam. But when it comes to injuring Hekdesh, anytime you injure a shor of Hekdesh, it is going to be Nezek Shalim, whether the injuring shor, the perpetrator shor, is a tam or is a muad. Okay, so I will say, so the truth is, while the conversation is fascinating and riveting, the truth is, it's a little bit, it's not really lemaisa, because halacha lemaisa, we paskin like the Tanakama, not like Rav Shimon Manasya, and therefore we hold that halacha lemaisa, whether a shor of Hekdesh damages a shor of regular Jew, or the shor of a regular Jew damages a shor of Hekdesh, whenever one of the parties to the damage is Hekdesh, is the Beis HaMikdash, there is no liability, there's no damages, right? Not for tam, not for muad. Why? Because we subscribe to the drasha of Re'ehu. The halacha of damages, when it comes to a damaging shor, tam or muad, is only a din between Jews. Once Hekdesh is a party to this, no liability. Incredible. Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, 38a, second line. Shor shel Yisrael shenagach, shor shel Kenani patur. So the next thing the Mishnah said is that if a shor of a Jew goes ahead and gores the shor of a non-Jew, there's no liability. But remember again, but the reverse is not true, right? If a shor of a Jew injures the shor of a Kenani patur, but if the shor of a Kenani injures the shor of a Jew, whether it's tam or whether it's muad, you have to pay nezek shalim. So let's analyze. Amri, the man of shach. So I don't understand this halacha. Let's analyze. Ire'ehu dafka. So if, again, once again, if we're dashing re'ehu, which tells us that the laws of shard damages only apply between Jews, then the knani kinarach di yisra namili pater. Then if that's the case, then when the shard of a non-Jew injures the shard of a Jew, he should also be pater. The Gemara says, v'ire'ehu lav dafkin, if you're not dashing re'ehu, afilu di yisra kinarach di knani nechayiv. Then ultimately, even when the shard of a Jew injures the shard of a non-Jew, there should be liability. So we'll say, listen to this incredible Rabbi Avoh quotes the pasuk. Quoting pasuk over here from Chabakuk. The pasuk says, Amad vayimodid aretz, ro'a vayoter goyim. So speaking about the Ribbono Shel Olam went ahead, he literally, Amad, he stood up, he surveyed the land. Ro'a, he saw, vayoter, he released the goyim. He released the nations of the world. What does it mean, he released the nations of the world? But it's an incredible Gemara. Ra'a sheva mitzvos shekibla aleh menei noach. Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that the umos of the nations of the world were commanded regarding seven mitzvos. Remember again, whereas Klal Yisrael 613 mitzvos, the nations of the world are simply bound by the seven Noahide laws. The seven Noahide laws, which overwhelming majority of them, are intuitive. Okay, so what happened? Kivan shlo kaimu, but he saw that the nations of the world were not upholding the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach. They were not upholding the seven Noachide laws. So Amad Vehitir Mamonim Yisrael. So literally what this means is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu permitted their money to Klal Yisrael. Now, what does this mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu permitted their money to Klal Yisrael. What it means is that there's no liability. HaKadosh Baruch Hu exempted Klal Yisrael from payment of damages done to the non-Jewish nations. Obviously, I can't go and steal from a non-Jew. That I can't do. But Lameisa, where there are damages, ultimately, again, I'm not going to be liable to damages done to a non-Jew. It's a penalty. It's a penalty for the fact that the nations of the world were non-compliant with the seven Noahide laws. It's incredible. It's incredible. It's such an overwhelming Gemara that the Ribbono Shel Olam such. It's sobering. It's sobering. Truth is, quite frankly, it's depressing. The Ribbono Shel Olam set such basic expectations for the community of mankind. Such basic expectations. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that the community of mankind did not live up to the basic expectations levied upon them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, you're not going to live up to the basic expectations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore said, Klal Yisrael, which not only lives up to expectations, but surpasses expectations, is freed from financial liabilities, from damages done to the nations of the world. However, it's such a striking Gemara also when we see the barbaric nature of Hamas, and we see clearly again that community not living up to any social code or any code of conduct, but we even see how often the world even just lacks an empathy, even just lacks a basic sense of human care and concern for what happens to the Jewish. It's overwhelming. It sounds so strange to us. How can you not live up to Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach? But unfortunately, we see it. We see it. So the penalty ultimately for not living up to Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach is HaKadosh Baruch Hu released Klal Yisrael from any financial claims that may come about as a result of damages done between Jew and non-Jew. So the Gemara goes right there. Kevan shel kaimu ama beit mamon al Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yochanan agrees, he just quotes a different pasuk. He quotes, Hofia mehar paran. So we'll say, so Hofia mehar paran, that literally again, so Hofia, he revealed from Har Paran. Now Rashi points out there, what's Har Paran? Kishesive vehechser atorah kala umos lo kiblua. So this pasuk over here, in Devarim is talking about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and offered the Torah to the nations of the world, and none of them accepted it. And then it gives it to Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, not only do we accept it, but we say Nasav Nishma. There's a blind acceptance. We'll do it. We'll take it. We don't even know what's in it, but we'll take it. So Hofiyam Har Paran, HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and literally revealed from Har Paran. So the Gemara says over here, what does this mean? Mi Paran Hofiya Mamon Li Yisrael. From here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, revealed. Right? Revealed. Permitted the money of the nations of the world to Klal Yisrael. So once again, it doesn't mean I could take something from the nations of the world, but what it does mean is, in cases of damages, there's not going to be liability. See, all because the community of mankind abdicated its spiritual standing by non-compliance with Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach. That's it. It's a simple expectation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as of all of Israel. Remember again, we haven't cornered the market on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every human being is a child of the Ribbono Shel Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, so I have expectations. If you're my child, I have expectations. So for the Jewish people, the expectations are Tarek, 613 mitzvos. For the nations of the world, the expectations are 7 mitzvos. That's it. That's your expectations. And the community of mankind failed to live up to their expectations. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, if that's the case, then the truth is the social contract between you and Klal Yisrael has been broken. Remember again, for there to be a cohesive community of mankind, Klal Yisrael, we have to observe Taryag 613 mitzvos, and the nations of the world have to observe 7 mitzvos. If we're doing our part, but they're not doing our part, they're doing their part, I'm sorry, the social contract is broken. And once the social contract is broken, so everything unravels. Shmarach says, okay, so even in the realm of damages. So therefore, again, if a Jew damages a non-Jew, they're released from liability. Why? Because the Umos HaOlam did not live up to their part of the social contract. It's incredible. Time the rest of that supports this. Shor Shal Yisrael Shenagach Shor Shal Kenani. If a Jewish shor goes ahead and injures, gores a non-Jewish shor, pater. So ultimately, again, the Jew is pater. First wide line. Shor Shal Kenani Shenagach Shor Shal Yisrael. On the other hand, if the shor of a non-Jew injures the shor of a Jew, then bein tam bein mu'am mishan mezasham. So remember, this is the penalty. But if the shor of a non-Jew injures a Jew, whether the perpetrator shor is a tam or a muad, you have to pay nezek shalim. Shene emar, amad vayimodet aretz, ra'a vayaser goyim. Va'omer, hofia mehar paran. So here, actually, this brisa quotes both psukim. So the Gemara says, my va'omer, why do you have to quote the second pasuk? V'chi tema, hai amad vayimodet aretz mi barilei l'chid rav masuk and rav Yosef. Maybe you're going to say, because the first pasuk of amad vayimodet aretz, ra'a vayater goyim, is needed for a different drasha. The drasha of Rav Masna and Rav Yosef, which we'll see in just a moment. Tashma hofia mehar paran, mi paran hofia mamonan li Yisrael. So again, even if you think that the first pasuk is used for a different drasha, you have the second pasuk of hofia mehar paran. So the Gemara says, by the way, my Rav Masna, what's the drasha of Rav Masna? It's incredible. Then Rav Masna, amad vayimodit aretz ra'a, ma ra'a. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu see? What did he see when the pasuk says, amad vayimodit aretz ra'a? He saw. What did he see? He saw. Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded the nations of the world 7 mitzvos, and they did not go ahead and fulfill them. So the Gemara says, "Amad v'higla osa me'al ad masam." This is incredible. When Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that the nations of the world did not go ahead and live up to their side of the social contract, the religious contract, Kadosh Baruch Hu exiled them from their lands. It's interesting, because often we're used to hearing this concept with Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, right? When we don't comply with the tenets of the Torah, so we reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the land rejects us. But the truth is, we often assume that this is a uniquely Jewish concept. So Rav Masna says that's not true. When the nations of the world reject Shev Mitzvos B'nei Noach and do not live up to their part of the social contract, in the spiritual contract, they are exiled from their lands. Incredible. V'higla osam yal masam. Umay mashma dahai v'yoter lishna da'aglu yehu. So how do you know that lashna v'yoter ultimately again is lashna of galus, of exile? K'siv hacha v'yoter goyim k'siv hasam linater bahen ala aretz. So it's actually interesting, Raya over here. The Gemara is quoting from the pasuk in Vayikra when it's talking about, again, certain hopping insects, which are kosher. So the Gemara discusses over here the idea of haholich al arba shalob ra'ayim mima'al raglav linater bahen al ha'aretz. And how do you dash linater? So the Gemara says, entire game, lekaftza bahon al aretz, referring to jump grasshoppers, like jumping insects. Okay, so from here you see the lashon of linater, jumping. So again, also means galus. What's galus? The removing of one population from a particular land and moving it somewhere else. Incredible. My Rav Yosef. So that's what Rav Masna used the pasuk for. What does Rav Yosef use the pasuk for? Rav Yosef, amad vayimodit aretz ra'a. Mara, again, what did Hashem Baruch Hu see? What did Moshe see? So, Ra'a Shem Mitzvos Shekibol Alem B'nei Noach Lo Kaimum. Hashem Baruch Hu saw that there are 7 Mitzvos that B'nei Noach were commanded to keep and they did not keep them. Amad V'tiran Lohem. This is wild. Hashem Baruch Hu saw that the nations of the world did not keep the Shem Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Hashem Baruch Hu said, okay, you're not going to keep them? I permit it to you. Wow, sounds like Hashem Baruch Hu released them from the obligation to keep Shem Mitzvos B'nei Noach. So the Gemara says, really? Iskuri iskar? So apparently they're getting rewarded. Imkein matzinu chote niskar. So I guess you get rewarded, right? You don't listen to the mitzvahs. You don't do what Hashem Baruch Hu asks. So what does Hashem Baruch Hu do? He frees you from liability. That's strange. So when you do the wrong thing, you get rewarded in life. Chote niskar. So in general, we have a concept. Ein chote niskar. The sinner should not be rewarded. But here again, it sounds like the nations of the world didn't observe the Shabbos as B'nai Noach, and they're rewarded. Amar Mar Breiz Rav Nalomar, Shafilu Mekayimin Osen Ein Mekaben Alein Schar. This is incredible. What it means to teach us is that when they're freed from responsibility, it means that at this point, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, forget it. Forget it. You don't have to keep it. And even if they do keep it, they don't get reward. Is that true? V'lo, V'atayin Rav Meir Omer Minayin, Shafilu Mekayim Osen B'tar Roshu Kokoyin Gadol. Rav Meir said, how to know that if a non-Jew involves himself with the Torah, which means, that's without even delving too deeply into what this means, but on the most basic level, if a non-Jew observes spiritual precepts, he observes mitzvos, he tries to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's like a Kohen Gadol. He's like a Kohen. What does he mean like a Kohen Gadol? You know, the Kohen Gadol is like the epitome of Kiddusha, the epitome of holiness. The idea being that one should never think that the Jewish people have cornered the market on holiness. But even a Gentile, even a non-Jew who tries to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who tries to be a good person, who involves himself in spiritual endeavors, he could reach a level of holiness like the Kohen Gadol. Whether it's exactly like the Kohen Gadol, not like the Kohen Gadol, the point over here is he could achieve a heightened level of holiness. Tamalomar, Asheya Aseh Osa Adam V'chai Bohem. So we'll say, because the Pasuk says, these are the mitzvahs that a person shall do, Asher Ye'aseh Osam Ha'adam. Says that a person will fulfill them. Kohanim Levim Yisrael Lo Ne'amar Ela Adam. Pasuk uses a very nondescript term, Adam. Adam, if an Adam performs the mitzvahs, he will live. Who's Adam? Everyone's included in Adam. So the Gemara says, Halamarata, Shafilu Nochri Va'osik Patora, Harehu Kekoin Gadol. What you see from here is that Halacha L'maisa, even if a person is a non-Jew and they're involved in Torah, they become mamish like a Kohen Gadol. So the point over here is you see that they do get reward. Amri Eime Kabbalah Yishar Ki Mitzuvah Va'osa, Ela Ki Mishayin Mitzuvah. So you're right. So just to follow the progression. Once the nations of the world abdicated their spiritual responsibility to observe the Shem Mitzvot B'nai Noach, Kadosh Baruch Hu freed them from responsibility. What do you mean freed them from responsibility? That they don't get rewarded. They don't get rewarded. But they do get rewarded, we see. They get rewarded. It's actually incredible. They get rewarded like someone. They get rewarded like someone who's not commanded to do something but still does it. But they don't get rewarded for doing something as if they were commanded to do it and fulfilled that dictum. So we have this concept, we've seen this before, that there is greater reward for someone who is commanded to do something and he complies, more than for someone who is not commanded to do something and does it of their own volition. Even though intuitively, we often think the opposite is true, right? If you go out of your way to do something that you're not commanded to do, we think there's a higher level of reward. But we know, like, b'derech hashkafa, anything you have to do, you generally have a yetzer hara not to do. And it was basically, Bashan the Kodesh explains, man doesn't like to be told what to do. Don't tell me what to do. And consciously, subconsciously, when we are told what to do, we often find ways to rebel in order to flex our muscles of self-autonomy. When I'm doing something on my own, that's my own decision, the Yetzirah is not the same. Therefore, the Gemara says, it's really incredible, the Gemara says that there is greater reward for fulfilling a mitzvah that you are commanded to do more than fulfilling a mitzvah that you are not commanded to do. So therefore, the nations of the world, when they do a mitzvah, there is reward. There is reward. But at the end of the day, it's getting rewarded for something that you were not commanded to do. So because they did not comply with Shem Mitzvot B'nai Noach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu freed them from that responsibility. And therefore, if they choose to do it, do they get reward? Of course. But they get rewarded for as someone who is not commanded to do a mitzvah, but does it anyway. Incredible. So just mention, just like, Aderech HaShkafa, such a fascinating idea that here, the nations of the world didn't comply with the Shem Mitzvot B'nai Noach. So the Baruch Hu's response is to free them from any and all expectations and obligations. There's a tremendous Musar Haskel in this, which is the moment you no longer have expectations of someone is the moment you kind of like write them off. You give them up. We know this, right? Like in life, you know, like when you need something done, there are some people who you know you can call and some people you can't call, right? And those sometimes the people you can't call, they'll yes you. Oh, yeah. But you're not going to, in other words, so that type of person, like, I don't have any expectations of that person. Because I don't have any expectation that they can comply, I just don't ask them for anything. There is nothing worse in life than the Ribono Shel Olam not having any expectations of you. You know, sometimes you go through life and we think to ourselves, 613 mitzvos, there's so much upon us, right? 613, give me 7, right? Give me 10, give me 50, give me 100. 613, it seems like a lot, but understand, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts on us represents the heightened level of confidence he has in us. You only, listen to this, you only give someone 613 mitzvos if you believe they have the ability to comply. If you believe they have the ability to execute. If you believe that they have the ability to be excellent. You don't give someone, that's why like in halacha, a cheresh shel tevekatan, right? Cheresh shel tevekatan is exempt, they're exempt from momentless. Why? They don't have capacity. So if you don't have capacity, there are no expectations of you. But in this universe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greatest expectations he has is of a Yid, is of a Jew. There is no creature in this great universe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has greater expectations of than me and you. And although that sometimes it can feel absolutely overwhelming, but at the end of the day, what a vote of confidence in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, he gave me 613 mitzvos. Do you know why? Because he believes in us. The obligations levied upon us are the greatest testament to the belief that the Ribono Shel Olam has in us. It's absolutely overwhelming to contemplate. So the next time we feel like a little bit, maybe burdened, or a little bit overwhelmed, right? The next morning, you know, the alarm goes off, you just don't want to do it. You know, I don't want this, I wish I didn't have this expectation. Or the next time, you know, somebody comes collecting for tzedakah and you don't really feel like giving. Or the next time there's an opportunity to do a chesed, but maybe I don't even like the person who needs the chesed all that much. Just remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put those expectations upon us because he believes in us. And what this Gemara teaches us is that the moment HaKadosh Baruch Hu stops believing in you, he'll exempt you. No problem, go, enjoy life. Have a great life, right? Enjoy the party. I don't have any more expectations of you. Just do your thing. Live out your life. Go through the motions. Do whatever you're going to do with your time on this earth. He puts so much on us that he, Baruch Hashem, saddles us with so much awesome and overwhelming, at times, responsibility simply because he believes in us. Let's go back there. It says in the Torah, Rabbanon, "Ukvar shelcha malchus rami shtei." Is actually incredible. Gemara shtei sardiotos etzel chachmei Yisrael. So listen to this. So the Roman Empire sent two officers to some of the Jewish scholars, the chachmei Yisrael, with a simple request. Well, it's not a simple request; it's a pretty overwhelming request. But this is the request. So they say, "Lamdunu toraschem, teach us Torah." So the Romans wanted to learn Torah, so they sent two officers to the Rabbanim. Teach us Kala Torah Kulo. Okay, what happens? Karu, Vashana, Vashilshu. So they learned everything. Vashas Piti Rasam, when the officer is ready to take leave of the rabbis, Amru Lehem, Diknaknu Bechol Toraskem, the MSU. We've looked at your entire Torah and it's truth. Incredible. I want to be clear, we don't need the nations of the world to admit to the truthfulness of our Torah. We don't need that. We've learned a long time ago. You know, like some people go through life and they're always looking for approval. They always need affirmation from other people. As a nation, we've learned long ago, we don't need anyone else's approval or affirmation because we are the Ama Nivka, the chosen nation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all we need. But it is nice sometimes when it does happen. So the officer said, we review Torah, MS. The whole thing is MS. Chutz Midavar Zeh. There's one thing that bothers us. Sha'atem Omrim Shor Shal Yisrael Shenagach Shor Shal Kinani Potter. V'shal Kinani Shenagach Shor Shal Yisrael Bein Tam Bein Muam V'shayim Nezik Shalim. So what they are bothered was the halach in our Mishnah. Here's what we don't understand. If the Jewish shar gores a non-Jewish shar, so pater. But if a non-Jewish shar gores a Jewish shar, then whether the goring shar was tam or muad, you have to pay complete damages. And these officers said, let's see, manavshach, ire ehu dafka. Again, obviously the officers, they were holding, right? They did the sugya. So they said like this, If we darshin re'ehu, then afilo de kenani kinagach de Yisraeli potter, then even when a kenani gores a Jew, should also be potter. V'i re'ehu lav dafka, but if re'ehu, if you don't darshin re'ehu, afilo de Yisrael kinagach de kenani l'chayiv, then even if a Jewish shor gores a non-Jewish shor, you should be chayiv. So out of all the entire Torah, this was the one halacha that didn't make sense. I just want to point out, it's not the pshat that they were saying, it's not right, you're favoring Jews over non-Jews. They were asking, either you make the drasha of Re'ehu or you don't make the drasha of Re'ehu. But either way, be consistent. And they said, V'davar zeh ein anu modim oso l'malchus. They said, okay, but we're leaving. Shkayach, thank you for the time. Thank you for teaching us. We're going to share what we learned with the Roman emperor, with the Caesar, with the government. But we're going to leave out this halacha. So meaning it's fascinating because the owners of this halacha could obviously cause incredible animosity. And they were impressed, obviously, with what they learned. And probably they were impressed from who they learned from. And therefore, again, they said, we're going to go back to Rome, give them over all the teachings. But this teaching, we're not going to say over. Incredible. We'll say, this is now an overwhelming Gemara. Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Shchivalei Barte. Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, his daughter passed away. Now, the Pashas, you see from the context over here, that it was a young girl. So Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda lost his daughter. Amrili Rabbanu Le'ula, Kum Nezel Ninchamei. So the rabbi said to Ula, we're going to be Menachem, we're going to comfort the mourner. Right? Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda is sitting Shiva, we're going to comfort him. Amrili Hu, Ma Isle Gavi Nechemte Debavloi Digidufu. So this is, Ula responds very sharply. He's like, I'm not going to console the mourners to the Babylonians. Why? Because the way the Babylonians console each other, it's blasphemy. Rashi says over here, Tigidufo kapi malas blasphemy. How is it blasphemous? Listen to this. The Amri, my F Sherlami Avet. Apparently by the Babylonians, when they were sitting Shiva, it was common for the Avel to say, either for the Avel to say or for other people to say the Avel, My F Shali Ovid. What is there to do? In other words, the loss is the loss. The person has died. What is there to do? What's the problem with that statement? Ha F Shali Me Eved Avdi. The inference from that is that if you could change the circumstances, you would. But here's the problem. The problem with that is it's a lack of acceptance of the justness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's din. You know, when Rachman HaSalam, a person loses a loved one, we have a tefillah called Tzidok HaDin. Tzidok HaDin, and Tzidok HaDin is essentially acceptance of judgment. That as part of our avoda as Jews is to accept that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is just, is correct, even if it hurts, and even if it's painful, even if we can't understand it, right? We say, Hashem nason, Hashem lakach, yihi shem Hashem avarach. Hashem has given, Hashem has taken, the name of Hashem should be blessed. That part of our obligation that we have as Jews is, although we have a very rich history of questioning, but when it comes to difficult events in life, sometimes our avoda is to accept. And to accept the fact that even though some events in life defy comprehension, I believe that all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is just. So Rabbi Yehuda, so Ula did not want to go to Menachem Avol by Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda because he felt that the way the Babylonians speak during Shiva, the way they comfort each other, is not right. By the way, there's a similar halacha like this in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch means that Hilchos Avelos, that a person shouldn't say, oh, if only I could change this, I would. Even though it's something like the most reflexive thing to say, but you can't say that. Why? Because whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is just. And even if I feel it, I can't verbalize it. And I have to reach a level where ultimately I could accept whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does in this world, even if it pains me to pieces. And even if there's a sense of anger that I have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but at least to be able not to articulate it. I can articulate it between myself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's always this space to have open and honest dialogue, even if it's anger, and even if it's resentment, and even if it's not accepted, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But kind of like in the context of community, we have to work on acceptance. We have to work on acceptance. So therefore, again, Ula didn't want to go. So what happened? So the Gemara says, Azahu l'chudei gabe. So Ula, so in other words, what turns out from the Gemara is Ula didn't want to go with the group. Ula went to Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda by himself. So listen to this. So this is now the Shiva visit between Ula and Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. So Amarle, Vayomar Hashem Moshe, Al Tatzer Asmo V'Atiskar B'Melchama. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, do not go ahead and do not afflict or do not go to war against Moab. V'chima Allah al Daito. This is the Shiva visit. V'chima Allah al Daito Shal Moshe Lasos Mechama Shalob Rishus. Sounds like Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe not to go to war against Moab. So it sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu was ready to go to war. Moshe is going to go to war without the permission of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't seem to make much sense. Ela nosa Moshe kavachomer biatzmo. Moshe benim the kavachomer. What was the kavachomer? Uma midyanim shelo ba'u ela la'azor es Moav. So the midyanim only came to help Moav, right? When they were fighting against the Jews. So Amra Torah, Tzras HaMidyanim Yikis Mosam. Yet the Torah says, round up the Midyanim and go to battle against them. So the Midyanim were only helping out Moav in their oppression of the Jewish people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, go and round up and destroy Moav. We'll say, Lamed Chesem Beis 38b. Moavim Atzman Lakol Shekin. So certainly Moav itself were the ringleaders in all this. Right? So remember, by the way, Rashi points out that this is specifically Bilam. Right? Remember again, the nation of Moab were the ones who went ahead and hired Bilam. So remember, it's only after Bilam's cursing of the Jewish people failed that the Midyanim decide, you know what, Bilam's advice also, let's ensnare them in a web of immorality. So Moshe Yadim Elakav HaChomer, if the Midyanim who are only following the example set by Moab, so they're right, we have an obligation to go out to war against them, and certainly Moab themselves, who started this whole thing, we should go to war against them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, lo kisha al sadaitcha al sadaiti. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe, I don't think the way you think. In other words, literally again, what comes upon my mind is not what comes upon your mind. Moshe Abenu. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, Moshe Abenu, you only see in the here and now. But I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm responsible for seeing Haya, Hovevi, past, present, and future, and seeing all of them concurrently. Watch this. Shtei predos tovos yeshu lahotzi mehen. There are two beautiful doves that I have to take out from this nation of Moav. Who are they? Rus Moavia, Mena'ama Ha'amonis. So beautiful. Rus and Na'ama. Two women who would join the ranks of the Jewish people, who each of them played their own role in the creation and then continuity of the Davidic dynasty. So there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, don't go to war against Moav, don't touch Moav, because there are still two women who have to come from this nation who are going to join and bolster Klal Yisrael. Incredible. So we'll see. So what does this have to do with anything? So remember, this is a Shiva visit. Fellow Dvaran Kal Vachomer. So again, if at the end of the day, because of these two doves, right? So ultimately, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spared the nations of Ammon and Moab, right? So Moab here, the Torah tells us, you're not allowed to start up with Ammon and Moab. Why not? Because Baruch Hu said to Moshe, there are two doves, Rus and Na'ama, who have to come from these nations, so leave them alone. So Ula says to Rabbi Yehuda bar Shmuel, so you see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves nations when there's something that's going to come from them in the future. So he says, Bito shel Rebbe, im kshiru ri'i, latzeis mimenu davar tov, alachas kama v'kama dehavachai. So let's translate the words, and then let's see what he says. So Ula says this whole drasha to Rabbi Yehuda bar Shmuel. He says, Rabbi Yehuda bar Shmuel, if your daughter had more to accomplish, right, if she was supposed to marry and bring forth future generations, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have let her live longer. Okay, so this was the Nichum Avinu. So what's happening over here? So I think what Ula is touching on is something very, very profound. Sometimes one of the most tragic elements of loss is a feeling that a person has not fully actualized their potential. Right, a person dies, and like, oh, they could have done so much more, they could have accomplished so much more. This pain and this feeling is exacerbated and amplified a hundredfold in the Achmana Litzlan Lo Aleinu, the loss of a child. Right? What's the beauty of a child? The beauty of a child is when you look at a child, what you see is potential. When you look at a child, all you see is like what can be in the future. And when the child leaves this world, the pain of not only just the loss that someone who I love is gone, but the loss of that potential. And Ula understood that this was the pain that Rabbi Yehuda bar Shmuel was sitting with. So what does Ula say? Ula says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not allow a person to leave this world until their potential is fully actualized. V'haraya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, leave alone Ammon and Moav. Why? Because something's coming down the pike. There are two women who are going to come out of these nations, Rus and Na'ama. Rus from Moab, Na'ama from Ammon. So don't touch them, because see from here that when something has to happen in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow anything to happen to those entities in the present. So therefore, what Ulu was saying to Rabbi Yehuda is something so profound. He says, your daughter, it's overwhelming. Your daughter did everything she was supposed to do in this world. Whatever her tachlis was, whatever her avoda was, she did it. And you should not, chas v'shalom, think that she left this world before being able to accomplish her mission, her tachlis, her tafkid. Whatever she was put here to do, she did. This was the Nechama Ve'elam. This was the Nechama Ve'elam. And the story, of course, ends right there. And it's thinking about what an overwhelming Gemara, because you know, Chevra, one of the things that is so painful for us in this current Tekufa is when we look at so many of those who were so brutally murdered on Simchas Torah on October 7th here in Eretz Yisrael. You know, we think about every one of those kabbalas is overwhelming. But you hear about children, the loss of the death of a child in general is heart-wrenching. And the murder and sadistic murder of a child is overwhelming. But what's important for us to know is that whatever the avoda of these precious children were in this world, whatever they were supposed to do, they did. The truth is, it goes for every man, woman, and child. And it has to be a nechama for us, for this particular difficult chapter of Klal Yisrael. But I think also even just in our own personal losses, we all deal with loss in different ways. And sometimes when we lose that loved one, that pain of unrealized potential or unactualized dynamic life activity. And we have to realize that what Ula was saying is, everyone does what they're supposed to do before they leave this world. Because if they didn't do what they were supposed to, Kadosh Baruch Hu would not let them leave. And this was the Shiva visit. This was Shiva visit between Ula and Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shmuel. You know, who knows? I don't know if Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shmuel felt better immediately after Ula said these words or not. But you know, sometimes people say words of consolation that don't necessarily console you in the moment, but further down the road, maybe when you're a little bit more open and receptive to it, those words have a way of sinking into the heart. Incredible, incredible Gemara. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapeach schar kol berya, afilu schar sicha no'e. So listen to this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a beautiful Gemara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't withhold the reward due to any person. Every person gets rewarded for their actions, even a small action. For example, sicha no'e, nice speech. De'ilu bechira de'ka'amra Moav, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Tatzir HaMoav. So remember again, Ammon and Moab come from Lot and his two daughters. The oldest daughter, who had relations with her father first, calls her son Moab. Now, Moab is a pretty explicit name. Moab means Me'av, from my father. So this oldest daughter pretty much publicized this act of incest. So Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, when it comes to Moab, Al tiskar bam, right, literally, don't afflict Moab, and don't do war with them. Milchamahu delo, so you can't go to war with them. Ha angaria avibu, but you can tax them. Tax them. In other words, you can make Moab into a vassal state, but she can't go to war with them. So the Gemara says, Tzira de Kamra ben Ami, now the younger daughter, after she had relations with her father, became pregnant and gave birth, she named her son Ammon. Ammon means son of my nation. So she does not publicize the act of incest. Oh my gosh, Baruch Hu Moshe, v'kiraftam ol b'nei Ammon, al titzurim v'al tasker bam klal, da'afilu angaria lo savibu. So Moshe, when the Torah talks about, again, the treatment of Ammon, the Torah says, you're not allowed to start up with Ammon at all. Meaning, you can't even tax them. Can't even tax them. So the Gemara says, how do you understand the difference in treatment between to Ammon and to Moab? So Moab, you can't do war, but you can tax them. Ammon, you can't do war and you can't tax them. Why the distinction? So the Gemara attributes it to the fact that the younger daughter spoke nicer than the older daughter. The older daughter was a bit more, as they say, prust. You know, a bit more explicit in her indiscretion. Even though, again, it was L'shem Shamayim. But L'maisa, still, it was a little bit, it's not right. It's not the way to speak. And the younger daughter spoke in a better way, a more refined way. And therefore, again, her offspring is rewarded. A really incredible Gemara just about the power of just positive speech. Positive speech, sicha no'a, even for just positive speech, even if, you know, sometimes in life you have to say difficult things. So the goal in life is to be able to say difficult things in a nice way. You have to give feedback, you have to give criticism, you have to give critiques, and you have to give musar. Sicha no'a, do it nicely. Do it nicely. Everything, any way that we interact, any way that we speak, should always be with a beautiful lashon towards one another. And again, Gemara says, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives schar, even sicha no. Incredible. So Gemara goes weiter. V'amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, amar Rabbi Yishuv ben Karach. L'olam yaktim adam l'dvar mitzvah. A person should always be alacritous, right? That person should always have a zrizos, right? Should run to do a mitzvah. Why? The Gemara says, This is incredible. Now, it's interesting. Lashon of Yaktim Adam. Yaktim Adam L'Dvar Mitzvah means, like Kodem means early. In other words, in general, in life, it could be that I'm about to do something. But we know this. Like, you could do it like, you know, kind of schlepping along. Or you could move. You could do it. So the Gemara says, when doing a mitzvah, even though, either way, I'm going to get the act done. But there's something, Yaktim, mean, do it with zrizos. Do it with eslavos. Do it with excitement. Do it with haste. Because when you do something with haste, it shows that you care about what it is you're doing and find the meaning in it. Sigmara says, listen to this. This is a reverse drush. Listen to this. Sigmara says, Shebishvil b'ayla achar shekidmasa b'chir l'tzira, kidmasa arba doros l'yisrael. Because the older daughter took the initiative and had relations with her father first. And I remember again, just to back up a little bit, the daughters of Lot thought that the world was destroyed. That's why they slept with their father. Right? They thought they were the last woman, he was the last man. So there was, if there was any future, it was going to have to come from them. The older daughter, it was her idea, and she went first. She went first. So because of that, because so to speak, she had zrizos, kadma abdos Yisrael. Ultimately, her offspring joins the Jewish people four generations earlier. In other words, Oved, Yishai, David, Shlomo. And that's the nation of Moab. Because remember again, Moab comes from Rus. Rus comes from Moab. And ultimately, again, Rus's descendants are Oved, Yishai, right? In other words, her first Jewish descendant is Oved. Is Oved. Okay. Ve'ilut Si'ira, but the younger daughter, who was the mother of the nation of Ammon, so Ad Rechavam. So remember again, so ultimately again, she has a daughter, Naama, and Naama has a daughter, has a son, Rechavam, son of Shlomo Melech. Shem Imo, Naama HaAmonis. So remember again, Shlomo marries Naama, they have a son, Rechavam. So the point over here is, it's interesting that Ammon joins the Jewish people earlier than Moab, and the Gemara attributes this to the fact that the older daughter, the mother of Moab, ultimately had zrizos. She had greater alacrity to this mitzvah, to ultimately, again, perpetuating what she thought was the human race at this point in time over her younger sister. It's interesting, just interesting kind of where you see zrizos from. But again, the idea being that a HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead, when a HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that someone is trying to do the right thing and putting in the effort to do the right thing, a HaKadosh Baruch Hu never withholds reward from such a person. Suppose you know another interesting Gemara. So right, if a shor of a Yisrael goes ahead and gores the shor of a kusi, and then you will say, we're back to kusim. Kusim come up, I think, pretty much in every mesechta. So remember again, kusim, the king Shalmaneser, who went ahead and exiled the 10 tribes, went ahead and brought in other nations and settled them in Eretz Yisrael. Among them were these people from the country of Kusa, known as kusim. There was an outbreak, now kusim were idolaters, it was an outbreak of lions, and the kusim converted. There's a whole shaila as to whether or not the conversion of the kusim is a legitimate conversion or not. So the Gemara says, so shor shal yisrael shenagach shor shal kusim. So if a Jewish shor went ahead and gored a kusi shor, so what's the halacha? Pater. Ultimately, the Yisrael's pater. B'shal kusi shenagach shor shal yisrael, tam, b'shal chatzi nezek, mo b'shal nezek shalim. But if a kusi shor goes ahead and gores a Jewish shor, if it's a tam, you pay half damages. And if it's a muad, nezek shalim. Rabbi Meir says, shor shal yisrael shenagach shor shal kusi pater. On the other hand, holds that halacha lemaisa, if a kusi shor goes ahead and gores a Jewish shor, nezek shalim. Jewish shor gores a kusi shor, Remember the story of Meir kusim gerai. So we'll say, obviously, Rabbi Meir is treating kusim like non-Jews. So is that Rabbi Meir holds a kusim like gerai rayos? Or minig, Rabbi Meir raises kasha, kolak samim alboy merakem torim. We'll say some are stains. Now we're dealing over here. With halacha lemaisa again, menstrual bleeding. So in general, again, a stain that comes from menstrual bleeding could go ahead and convey tumah, unless of course it comes from a non-Jew. So therefore, the Gemara says any samim coming from the city of Rekem are tar. Why? Rashi points out over here, torim ir sheruba nochrim hi. Again, ultimately, it's a city where the majority of the population are non-Jews. Rashi points out over here, dam nochri tar midorai. So the chsiv dabra b'nei Yisrael. So again, so the Gemara darshins, only a Jewish woman conveys tumah through nida, but a nochris, a non-Jewish woman, does not. So therefore, again, any stains that come from rakem are tar. Rabbi Huda metame. Rabbi Huda says, no, they're tame. Why? That they shen gerim v'toim. Because in fact, in rakem, they were converts. They were Jewish, but they were not very knowledgeable in halacha. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, you have to go ahead and treat them as menstrual stains from Jewish women, and therefore, again, they convey tumah. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. Fine. So therefore, stains that, right, so again, if there's a stain that comes from Nachrim, non-Jews, it's tar, from Jews, and from Kusim, choosing, so we're looking at Jews and Kusim together, Rabbi Meir metame, Rabbi Meir says they're both tame. So Rabbi Meir treats Kusim like Jews. And the Chum ultimately say that they're tar. Why? Because ultimately, and the Chum hold that halacha lemaisa, they're not nechshad on ksan. I will say, why is this important for us? Alma kasar meir kusim gerei emesen. I will say, the point over here is, this is a long-winded proof, to say, or a contradiction, Rabbi Meir holds that kusim are Jews. We just said before, kusim are naturals, right? Rabbi Meir held that halacha lemaisa, that if a Jew goes and injures the, if a Jewish shar injures a kusi shar potter, and if a kusi shar injures a Jewish shar, whether it's tam or mod, you pay nezek shalem, which means you're treating a kusi like an akum. Here we're saying, according to Rabbi Meir, that a kusi is ultimately again considered, that the kusi is considered like a Jew. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, "Am Rabbi Avo, kinasu shekhanas Rabbi Meir b'mamonim, shalei tamo bahen." Ultimately, again, you're right, the Gemara says it was a knas. It's a penalty payment. It was a penalty payment. Ultimately, again, that halacha lemaisa, they imposed this penalty payment to avoid intermarriage. Okay. Rashi says over here, honestly, tfei bin tanakama. Fine. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, Masa Rabbi Zeira is the kasha, the elu nara sheishlan knas. So let's remember again, if a man violates a nara, man violates a girl, then there's a penalty payment that he has to pay for violating her. So the Gemara says, Bamam zeres valen asina valakusis. And this applies whether the girl is a mamzer, a regular Jew, regular Jewish girl, mamzeres, an asina, or a kusis. So why doesn't Rabbi Meir say a knas over here also? Say that a Jewish man who violates a kusi girl shouldn't be chayiv to pay the penalty payment. Ultimately, again, I will say why. Because if a man violates a woman, if you free him from liability to pay the penalty payment, then ultimately, again, you're rewarding a sinner, which of course is incorrect. To which the Gemara says, therefore, again, we pay the penalty payment. So why not just go out and take the penalty payment? Don't give it to the girl, give it to the poor. Ultimately, you know, here's the problem with that. The problem is that halacha lemaisa, if the man violates a girl, the kusi girl, and you don't make him liable to pay her, just say, give it to tzedakah, that's fine. Who's going to claim that if he doesn't pay it? In order to ensure that he pays, there has to be a defined claimant. There has to be someone who's actively chayiv to go ahead and pay. Incredible. So I will say it happens to be. So get therefore fine. So therefore we know in general this machlokis about kusim is an ongoing machlokis. Even over here, what's the halacha? What's the halacha? Ultimately, again, if a Jewish shark gores a kusi shark, that's going to be machlokis. That's going to be a machlokis. But it's the same general machlokis in terms of what is the status of kusim. All right, Jabosai, we will stop over here for today. What an incredible, incredible schus to learn with all of you. Wishing everyone an incredible, beautiful start to the week. Halavai again, it should be a week of Besoros Tovos for Klal Yisrael. I'm wishing everyone a Freilich and Chanukah.